This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation pop experience. We are back. Pop Goes to the Couch, covering the latest show on the Disney Plus. That is Hawkeye. I'm Andy Atherton, one of your hosts here on this fine show as we break it down every week on every episode. We have a full house for the first time for Hawkeye, and let's get the crew in here. Back from his sojourn, we'll call it, to New York City to see Rogers the Musical is Sean Kidd. Hey, Sean.
Yeah, not only to New York to see Rogers the Musical, but also to California to do some updating of my current pop feed contract. So, but it is very good to be back here to talk about Hawkeye. I'm very sorry. Well, actually, I'm not sorry. I missed the last episode, but I'm sure I'll tell you how I feel about that as we move on tonight. So, but great to be here.
All right. Well, welcome back, Sean. Also joining us is Scott Shiflett. What's going on, Scott?
Andy, thanks for having me back. Sean, you were missed last week, but I think me and Tim and Andy had a great talk about the first two episodes. And as we get to the third one tonight, I think we're on a solid, positive trajectory with the show.
Oh, yes. Get that Pym arrow out ready. All right. And finally, it is Tim Capel. Hey, Tim.
Hey, happy to have a full house once again here on Pop Goes to the Couch, or the basement, depending on your point of view. ready to talk some The Hawkeye on the Disney Plus.
All right. Very good. Well, before we start, Sean alluded to it. Sean, can you just give us briefly your thoughts on the first two episodes that were dropped last week?
Yeah, I'll go brief here. So as everyone knows, I think I've said it, Hawkeye is like one of my all-time favorite. I think Tim said it too. Like, he's a really good, like, B, C-level character. And next to Black Knight, he's probably my other favorite. And then Hercules is in that too. But so I was really excited for this show. And I got to be honest, with the exception of the first 10 minutes of the first episode, I was kind of disappointed. I kind of felt like, to kind of piece the story together, it was always circumstances or, you know, like, just like, how does Hawkeye happen to be in New York with Kate Bishop? And how does the Ronin outfit happen to be auctioned at the same time? And how does Pizza Dog all of a sudden show up? And like, it just seemed like a lot of coincidental elements to try to bring it together. And I didn't feel like it really gelled well that much. So I was really, really disappointed in the first two episodes. I wasn't feeling it. I didn't like it. And for once in my life, when it comes to Hawkeye, I was agreeing with Tim, to be honest.
Wow.
Sorry. Yeah.
Stranger things have happened. Wrong. Yeah. All right. So we are going to talk about episode 3. That is called Echoes. It starts off in 2007. In school, the deaf Maya Lopez is in class at a regular school with her other non-hearing impaired students. She lip reads the teacher's instructions and follows them. The teacher comes over, aware of Maya's handicap, and is surprised the girl is following her instructions. Later at home, Maya and her father, William, are doing shadow puppets. Maya asks why she isn't going to school with kids like her, and her father says that she is one of a kind and that it would be better for her to go to a regular school. When Maya asks if she'll have to stop signing, William assures her that she won't and she has to learn how to jump between two worlds. Maya asks how, and her father tells her that it's not about watching. Okay. Here we go, Tim. I'm gonna cut a promo. Not about fucking
it's
people.
It's buried the recap already.
Yes. Later, Maya goes to karate school and watches the other students fight. William, who is with her, tells Maya to be good in class. Remember that it's more about speed than size. He tells his daughter that her uncle will take Maya home after class. Maya is called out to the mat, walking on her prosthetic leg, and defeats the student. Maya grows up, continuing to fight in a ring and win. After class, she goes to her father's garage and sees Ronan killing her father and his employees. The vigilante doesn't see her. Maya sneaks in and goes to her dying father, and he tells her to go before dying. So we get a little backstory on the character we were introduced to at the end of episode 2. Sean, what do you think of this kind of a history here, or catching up everybody up on who Maya, a.k.a. Echo, is?
Okay, as much as I didn't like how the first two episodes kind of transition and piece things together, I did like the beginning of this, because what it did is at the very end of the last episode, you saw who would be Echo appear at the end, which was cool. And then I love how they tell her backstory here, and it all makes sense. And literally the first 5 to 6 minutes, you get her background. You find out who she is. You get a little thing about the uncle, which I'm sure we'll talk about later in this. But you also saw the scene where, you know, Ronan killed her father. And of course, she's going to assume, I mean, obviously, we know Hawkeye was Ronan during the whole 5 years after the snap. So it's interesting. Now, I do not necessarily know if that was Hawkeye that was playing Ronan in that. Based on them hiding the face, I'm going to guess no. I have my suspicions of who it might be, but we will see. But I really enjoyed this. I thought it set it up really nice and kind of gave you the background on Echo and who she was without really knowing who she was at the end of the last episode. So I thought it pieced it together well.
All right. Scott, your thoughts?
I love, like, the sign language aspect of this. Like, I had never heard of Echo until, like, last week when we were talking about it. But this is a little fun fact about me. I have always been obsessed with sign language. Like, I've always wanted to learn it. I wanted to take it in college, but they didn't recognize it as, like, a foreign language, so I had to take Spanish instead, which is my kryptonite, as many people can tell you, like, foreign language. But, like, I don't know. I've just always been, like, obsessed with sign language. Like, I literally paused the episode I was telling it and told my wife. I was like, do you know what I'm thinking about? She goes, that you want to learn sign language? And I was like, yes. So, wow. Like, that little fun fact, like, I'm just obsessed with it. But we see that she's had a rough life. Not only, you know, is she deaf, but she also has, like, a prosthetic leg. Like, what the hell happened to her? I wonder if we're going to find out if she was in some type of accident or something. Because that seems like a really, you're already, like, you know, deaf, but to have a prosthetic leg. I mean, she still whoops that kid's ass in the at karate. But Sean, back to the, and with the Ronin thing, who do you think it was? Because I just assumed it was Ronin.
Well, you know, I suspect it's not, because, I mean, it could be. I could be totally wrong, but maybe it's my gut tells me it could possibly be a swordsman, but I could be wrong. But I don't think it's Clinton that outfit killing her father, but I could be totally wrong.
Okay, yeah, because I didn't even think of that, and that's why you're here.
Yep.
I could be totally wrong too. This is comicbook.com Sean talking, so what do I know?
Well, it's interesting, because I hadn't really thought about it until this discussion just now. Like, it doesn't, if it is Clint in the Ronin suit killing her father, it definitely does not present him in the most positive light. I mean, exactly. We know he did some terrible things while he was Ronin, this vigilante. And again, I still think a lot of that stuff in Endgame was very tacked on and didn't work. And if anything, I'm hoping this series manages to make some sense out of that whole time period for him. I think, and I hope, we're going to get some flashbacks with just what was really driving him, what was really motivating him during that time period. I don't think it's just as simplistic as, oh, I lost my family, now I'm a big vigilante edgelord kind of thing, right? So I hope we get some callbacks to his actual time as Ronan. And the father character to Maya, Echo, is presented pretty sympathetically. Like, he might be a bad dude. He probably is, if it's, you know, consistent with the comics. But, you know, we upon his introduction, we like him. We don't want to see him get brutally murdered like this. So unless they're going for a real Shades of Grey kind of redemption story with Clint, I am kind of thinking maybe that was someone else in the Ronin suit. And also, because of Maya's age, she seemed very young in that flashback. Like, I don't know, maybe 10 years old tops is what I was thinking. It's always hard, you know, with kids to pin down an exact age. And if it's only been, you know, 5, 6, maybe 7 years and change since the time that Clint first picked up that Ronin identity, like let's say that happened right after the snap, you know. So we'll say it's been, I'd say 7 years is being very generous, right, since his time as Ronin. Like, she would only be, you know, 17 years, like, she'd still be a teenager. She wouldn't be the young adult that we see her as in the present day, you know what I mean? Not that she's meant to be that old, but she certainly seems like, you know, she's like at least 20, a bit older, perhaps. So yeah, I think maybe this was like, was there an original Ronin and something happened with him, and then Clint assumed the identity and he was really the second Ronin? Maybe we get some kind of big reveal, some kind of backstory there. Or I'm just reading way too much into it. We'll see. And it, you know, it was just Clint. But this was an interesting sequence here where we get that extended flashback to Maya's childhood. I think it's sort of a nice contrast to what they did with Kate in the first episode of the show, showing these are two people with very different life experiences, very different backgrounds, who have been through trauma in pretty unique, in ways pretty unique to them. We saw them go very big with Kate living in the city through the Battle of New York, whereas Maya's trauma is a lot more personal. So I like what they're setting up there. And Echo is just such a cool character. And this casting is phenomenal, by the way. They yes. got someone who, her name is, and I don't know if I might be butchering the name here. I apologize. Aliqua Cox, who is both Native American and a deaf person, which, I mean, and looks just like her. I mean, when you see this actress and look at Echo from the comics, it looks like she stepped off the page. It's just fantastic. Again, that casting continues to be the MCU's secret weapon. Like, it's amazing here how they came up with this performer. She is apparently an amputee herself, the actress.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so because I was like, well, that's an interesting touch when they showed that Maya had the prosthetic foot. And I was like, I don't think that the character in the comics is an amputee. And I just got curious and was looking at who the actress was and some of her information just on Wikipedia. And yeah, she is an amputee herself. So they just, I guess, incorporated that into the show. So doesn't seem to slow her down a bit, does it?
No, because I like how they did that in the flashback, how they were showing how she was studying the person she was going against in karate and how he were like was leaning on his back foot, and that's what she went for. And it was a nice little touch. And we see that later on this episode.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, so I like this this opening with just all of that background with that. Just gave us a lot to sink our teeth into.
Yeah, in a short amount of time, too. Like, it was really, really well done how they did that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we go back to the present, and the Tracksuit Mafia have Clint and Kate. They are taped to mechanical toys and mock their two prisoners. When the thugs get bored, they go off to play cards. Kate tells Clint that he'd be lost without her. Clint says he was about to clear her name from the suit until she crashed through the skylight. Juan Mafioso Tomas is on the phone to his girlfriend, and he angrily hangs up. He tells Kate that his girlfriend wants to use the tickets. He's got her as a present for her and her sister. Kate gives Tomas, the mafioso guy, romantic advice. He goes off to call his girlfriend. And then another thug, Ivan, tells Kate that she talks too much. Maya comes in and notices that Clint is wearing a hearing aid. She untapes Clint and she signs to him until he explains that he's just hard of hearing. Her interpreter finishes untaping Clint and says that Maya asks why he's there. While Maya signs to Clint that he relies too much on his hearing aid and might be better off without it. Clint explains that Kate put on a Ronin suit by accident and didn't know what it means. Maya doesn't believe him, figures that Ronin is back. Clint says that Ronin is dead and says that Black Widow is who got him. He explains that he knows it because he was there, and the interpreter Kazi asks Kate why he put on the suit in the first place. Maya grabs Kate by the throat while Clint works on his remaining bonds against a loose piece of wood on the unicorn that he's riding. Kazi pulls Maya away while he argues with her. Clint tells Kate that they're going to escape and go back to their families. He cuts through their bonds and runs, and the Tracksuit Mafia chases after him into the shelves of the abandoned KB Toy Factory. Clint climbs up the shelves and kicks them over, jumps to the top. As he drops to the floor, Maya arrives and attacks him, kicking him in the head and knocking him out of his hearing aid. He dives into an office and finds his quiver and bow. All right, so we'll pause there. So we get the interrogation. We get Echo her first real, I guess, dialogue, and you know, we get the beginning of what will be a fun chase scene. Scott, give us your thoughts on this part.
I thought it was really funny. Like, you see them and they had them riding like the toys. I don't know. It just made me laugh. And I did like one of the guys is having issues like dating advice. And like, she's like, you got tickets to Imagine Dragons. Why would you do that? He goes, oh, I like them. I don't know. I just thought it was funny. And then we see like, you know, Hawkeye has a pretty good backstory of how Ronan was killed by Black Widow. And they're like, oh, that's convenient. She's dead too. So it's like, you can't really pin it on anyone. And that's a good way to do it. But obviously people see through the bullshit with it. The fight scene was pretty cool. And like, we see like his hearing aid get destroyed. So that felt, we're going to see that the whole episode. Like, he's pretty deaf. Not as deaf as Echo, but like, you know, he's pretty up there because like, he obviously can't hear anything. But yeah, it shows that Echo's a pretty badass fighter when she goes hand to hand combat with Hawkeye. I know he's not known for his hand to hand combat, but it was still pretty good.
All right. Tim, what are your thoughts?
I found it interesting that Echo did not know Clint was Ronan. So it seems like they have some sort of arrangement. They've maybe encountered each other in the past. I'm not sure, but that was what I was reading into that exchange where it's almost like he's reassuring her, no, Ronan's not back. And she really has it out for, you know, who she thinks is a totally separate person. I found that a little bit interesting, I guess, because I was under the impression that she knew he was Ronan and thought that he was operating as Ronan once again. And that's what's got her so pissed off. But no, she is not aware of that. And he is. So he has information that she doesn't. Kind of liked her getting all up in Kate's grill, because I, you know, haven't been the biggest fan of Kate's character, but like Echo is like pretty much immediately won me over in ways that Kate hasn't. So I'm really hoping we see a whole lot more of her, and we're about to see Hawkeye do some actual Hawkeye-ing for the first time in this series, which is pretty exciting. I also do love the layer, the villainous layer, which is like an old KB Toys warehouse, which, I mean, I guess they're still out there.
Yeah, I miss KB Toys. I know. Sean.
Yep. Memories.
Yeah, you can't have the chemical factory. That's taking them up in Batman and Joker, Tim. So you have to have the KB Toys factory.
Yeah.
Back. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this as well. This is kind of the Hawkeye I love. You got the fun little band, like I love them being tied up on the mechanical toys and it's just rocking back and forth. This kind of had the spirit of the comic with him and Bishop and their relationship, and I really like that. I like, even though I feel like they met under some really convenient terms, now mm-hmm. we're into the relationship, now we have that back and forth banter between them, which I really, really liked in the comics. And you feel like it's that mentor teacher relationship that, you know, I really like. And yeah, you got some good Hawkeye stuff in here. I remember when Echo debuted in, I believe it was Daredevil, and a lot of similarities. I mean, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong. Would you say there's some similarities there between her and Elektra a little bit? I mean, different backgrounds.
Yeah, I think that's the natural. Yeah, I think that's the natural comparison to draw. I think personally, I kind of like Echo as a comics character more than Elektra, who is a little bit played out at this point. But yeah, that's a I think. Immediately, that was sort of the comparison people were making, just due to her relationship, her romantic relationship with Matt Murdock, her connection to the Kingpin. But I think it was all very deliberate, and sort of a way of almost reinventing the Electric character.
Yeah, to kind of give it that same groove and vibe. It's, I mean, they're different. They're kind of the same character, but they're very different. And I think that's
putting a different spin on it. Yeah, just the latest in the Kingpin schemes to destroy Matt Murdock and Daredevil. And, you know, Echo was introduced in like the late 90s during that Marvel Knights Daredevil volume.
Yep.
David Mack creation. So,
yeah, but I really like her. I really do like her. And I like this whole scene and the setup. And again, the comedy with the guy hanging up with his girlfriend and Kate giving him advice. And then, you know, the whole thing with the hearing aid. This is as much as I did not feel like the first two episodes were my Hawkeye, I felt like this was my Hawkeye. And I'm totally enjoying episode 3 so far at this point.
All right. So Kazi draws his gun on Kate and tells her that excuse me, she isn't going anywhere. In the nearby office, Clint manages to pin Maya to the wall with two arrows, then runs as two more tracksuit mafia guys arrive. He jumps out of a window and shoots Kate free as he drops, then lands in a ball pit. Kate knocks Kazi down while Clint ducks below the sea of balls, then jams into two thugs' feet as they arrive. Kate knocks down Kazi with a shopping cart while Clint shoots at the tracksuit mafia as they arrive and fights the others hand-to-hand. Kate runs over to Clint and finally knocks out Kazi as Kate runs over to him. The two of them run out, and Clint hotwires an old car. He tells Kate to drive. She argues, and he points out that he can't hear her. The tracksuit mafia run out shooting. Kate gets in the passenger side, and Clint is forced to drive off as the thugs take up the pursuit in their trucks. One truck pulls ahead, and they open fire. Clint takes down a side street and tells Kate that he's all out of regular, but he has trick arrows. Kate opens fire and shoots a goo-expanding arrow on the windshield of Kazi's truck. Clint takes another side street and drives backwards. Kate fires an exploding arrow into one of the truck's engine. She shoots a suction arrow at a random into Maya's windshield, and Clint swerves into a Christmas tree lot. Kate shoots a line arrow into Kazi's truck, and a line snag nearby trees and pull them into the truck. The truck plows into more trees and stops. Clint gives Kate acid arrows from his trigger to bring down the stoplights ahead. Then the car swings around, and Maya pulls up in her Challenger. Clint and Tomas fight while Kate shoots a smoke arrow into Maya's car. Clint pulls away while the blinded Maya drives into the side of the bridge they're on. He's forced to stop when the cars are jammed up ahead, and the other tracksuit mafia trucks head for them. Clint gets out and hands Kate an arrow. The two of them shoot at the approaching trucks. Kate shoots up, and Clint shoots her arrow with his own that has pin particles in the warhead. And the first arrow enlarges and comes down as the lead truck, and Clint gives Kate a USB arrow and tells her to cover him. All right, so again, we'll pause again in the middle of this really fun scene, and we'll start with Tim. Tim, you know, this is really action, really picks up. We saw some of this in some of the previews, but it felt like brand new when I was watching it. And it was a lot of fun, and Kate, you know, not knowing what the arrows were going to do, I think added to the fun of it.
So I was critical of the action in the first two episodes of this series, but this is much more like it. As Sean said, Hawkeye feeling like Hawkeye, both in the warehouse escape and that absolutely awesome, awesome car chase. I mean, we've seen a lot of car chases, I feel like, in the MCU up to this point, and this is maybe my favorite, even more so than, the one in Winter Soldier through the streets of DC with Nick Fury, which is, you know, it's so awesome. This was right up there, and for a TV, quote unquote, TV show, felt incredibly cinematic. Did not seem like it was on a budget at all. Just really thrilling. This was incredible. And plus the trick arrows coming into play, because they're out of just regular arrows, leads to some very inventive sequences and some entertaining banter between Kate and Clint. And this is the kind of irreverence that I kind of figured we would get from the show. And it feels more natural here in ways that are reminiscent of the Hawkeye series that this borrows so much from. The Matt Fraction and David Aja series that I think this has a lot of callbacks to, and just the overall character from the comics. I thought a lot of that stuff, again, in the earlier episodes was a bit forced, a bit unearned. And here, having spent a bit more time with the characters and having them taking a more active role in the plot, it all comes together quite nicely. But man, how cool is that pin particle arrow takedown? just tremendous stuff. I loved this. And it just kept going. You know, it's a long sequence for as much as they cram in here, and it's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sean, your thoughts?
I loved every bit of it. I'm kind of like Tim. I was gonna say this might have been my single favorite thing in any of the MCU TV series we've seen so far, but it might be my favorite like chase scene ever in MCU period. This one's amazing. And again, it's Hawkeye and Kate Bishop being Hawkeye and Kate Bishop with their banter. The arrow stuff was amazing. The Pym arrow popped me big time. The chase was really good. I mean, how could you not like this scene? Like this, like if you had watched the first two episodes of this show and didn't come back for episode 3, you're missing out, because so far, this has been one of the best episodes of any MCU TV series that we've watched. I absolutely love this whole thing.
All right, so. Scott.
Yeah, just as these guys said, I love the you got Andy, you may kill me. I think it was a tracking shot of them in the car and how it panned around to like Kate shooting the arrows. Clint's like driving and they're both yelling at each other. And she's like, look, we're communicating now. It's just because Clint can't hear. I thought that was pretty funny. As those guys, as the guy said about like the different arrows, you see like, you know, how like we had seen Kate be good with the arrows when she took down the bell tower in the first episode. But now we see her like really good. As Sean said, Sean and Tim said about the pimp particle arrow. I thought that was so funny. And it shows like, you know, Tracksuit Mafia might are kind of legit despite being like, you know, dunked on in the first couple, in the first two episodes. I just love this. And I'm glad that Tim and Sean did as well, because I know they were on the fence about the show, but it sounds like we got them back, Andy.
Yep. Back into the fold.
So, it's only one episode. They'll get excited.
Yeah. don't crap your khakis just yet. All right, here we go.
That's right.
And back into the show. So Clint runs back into this great scene. I'm sorry that I had to. It was so much going on that I had to break this up into little pieces. Clint runs forward and grabs the suction arrow. He then ducks as Maya and her men on foot shoot at them. Kate fires the USB arrow into Ivan and it bounces off his chest. Clint runs to Kate and tells her to follow him. They jump off the side of the bridge, reminiscent of the shot from the Avengers. He fires up a grapple arrow fastened to his bow. Kate grabs the bow. They swing under the bridge onto a passing train where Clint uses the suction arrow to get a grip on it. Kate and Clint get into the train, and Clint figures they should walk the dog at Kate's apartment because it's been cooped up all day. He's got a heart. So when they get to Kate's apartment, Aunt's apartment, Clint puts ice peas on his neck while Kate gets the dog and takes for a walk. Clint gets a call, and Kate writes out that it's Nathaniel, or a little boy, since she doesn't know who Nathaniel is. Since Clint can't hear, Kate interprets for him and dictates, basically writes down on a notepad what Nathaniel is saying, that he's bored. Clint manages to keep the conversation going. When his son asks if he'll be home that night, he says he won't, and his son says it's okay, he won't be there for Christmas. His father promises that he will be there for Christmas, but has to go. Once Nathaniel hangs up, Clint thanks Kate for translating. So this was a scene just kind of show where, you know, Clint, you know, he's kind of fighting inner battle, basically, because, you know, he wants to do the right thing, and he also wants to take care of his family, but his family, you know, understands what his job is. So Sean, what do you think of this part?
So I love the bridge scene with them, like very reminiscent of that famous Hawkeye scene from the Avengers, but them going over the bridge, the whole grapple arrow, and that was all great. And then, you know, immediately Clint's like, oh, we probably should go walk the dog, I thought was very funny. And then kind of showing like his fatherly side. I like how they go from one end to the other, where he's on the extreme end of they're fighting for their life, and then in the next minute he's like, well, let's go walk the dog. Hey, by the way, my son's calling. And then you show that relationship of Kate like writing it out for him. He's like, it's just so I feel like they peeled back a lot of layers of Clint in this episode. You see, like I said, you see action Hawkeye, you see compassionate Hawkeye, you see father Hawkeye. Again, there's nothing about this episode so far that I have not loved. This was the Hawkeye I wanted. And yeah, this is good stuff. Good stuff.
All right. Scott.
The tail end of the scene where like they do the Avengers shot was awesome. I did like them on the train, because Andy, you'll get this. I don't think Sean and Tim play video games, but with them on the train, it reminded me in the Spider-Man game. If you do fast travel, it shows him on the train. And that's what made me think of that. So I got a nice little chuckle out of that. And I liked how they were both on the same page with that. It's like, oh, we need to walk the dog. But and like, so it shows that they're like, you know, they're thinking together. And, you know, Sean talked about, you know, peel back layers of the onions. It was like someone was cutting onions with that scene. It was so heartbreaking to me. I don't know. Like, it just touched a nerve with like the son wanting to see his dad, and his dad's like, I don't know. And like, he can't hear. So like, Kate is like writing out the instructions. I was wanting to call her Becky. I don't know why, but Kate was writing out the instructions.
Becky Lynch,
for what he was saying. Yeah, I guess that's what I'm thinking of. But it was. She's not trying to get me into school.
but it was just heartbreaking. And like the Nathaniel saying, oh, well, it's fine if you don't make it for Christmas, which, you know, we're starting to see that's what they were a little too heavy handed in Avengers 2 with like this family stuff. And they're doing it a whole lot better with this family stuff in this show. I know it's a show compared to a 2-hour movie and a 6 hours of a show, but it feels a whole lot more genuine than in Avengers 2, where it's like, oh, look, Hawkeye has a family. He's probably going to die, though, but, like, here's his family you're going to meet for a little bit.
All right, Tim.
Useful and necessary cooldown sequence here. We get more planes, trains, and automobiles with Hawkeye trying to get back home to his family. So you've got Kate/Becky. Playing the John Candy to his Steve Martin. We have, the unlikely allies who are now bonding and helping each other. And it's getting a little bit more serious, but in ways that are genuinely effective. We see also, as Scott pointed out earlier, just how dependent Clint really is on his hearing aid. He has evidently lost the majority of his hearing. And, Maya kind of calls him out on that, saying, you really are too slavish to technology. And he knows apparently very limited sign language. And she seems to kind of resent that fact. So we'll see if they go somewhere with this. I continue to enjoy. The developing relationship between the two of them that now feels quite a bit more natural.
All right. So at the toy warehouse, Maya has her men load up. Kazi talks to Maya privately and says that things got out of hand earlier. He says that they have to keep a low profile and can't let Uncle find out because he wouldn't be happy. Kazi reminds Maya that her father always put the crew first, and Maya reminds Kazi that she's in charge and will look into Clint. Clint and Kate go to an audiologist and sit waiting on a doorstep to get his hearing aid fixed. Kate texts Clint and she tells him that it's a good thing they call him Hawkeye and not Hawkeye. The audiologist arrives and agrees to fix his hearing aid, and they go in. Afterwards, they go to a Chinese restaurant. Clint turns down his hearing aid so he doesn't have to listen to Kate ramble on about the fight. He finally turns up to order coffee. Kate tells him that she's dreamed of fighting at Clint's side. Clint warns that being a hero comes with a price, a lot of sacrifices, and there are things that they will lose forever. Kate tells Clint that he needs a more recognizable costume and draws him a new costume on a napkin. Kate isn't impressed, and Kate figures that Ronan is someone close to Clint, and it's his job to keep their secret. He tells Kate that he's not a role model to anyone and never has been. Kate says that he left his family on Christmas to help her when she screwed up. She figures they're in it together, and Clint will have to pay for the meal because her mother canceled her credit card. All right. So, Scott, what'd you think of this part here? We get get Maya talking to Kazi, and we get Kate and Clint. So what's going on?
Well, Kazi has a funny line where Maya's like, oh, we can't talk now. And he goes, do you think they learned sign language in a day? And I don't know, that just made me laugh, because we're getting a whole lot more Kazi. Like, you know, even like these mafia guys are starting, the tracksuit mafia, they're starting to get character development. Like, I just thought Kazi would be a number two, but you know, he seems to care for her. I enjoyed them eating breakfast together because she's talking and Clint has his hearing aid turned off so he can't hear her, and then he finally turns it on, and I love this, where she drew his new uniform, and it was the uniform from the comics. And my first thought, I was like, I bet Tim and Sean love this. And he was like, I'm not wearing that, because it had like the ridiculous-ass mask, which he's known for in the comics. But no, it's just another good scene. And, you know, I know we had to get to the first two episodes, because I have my issues with the first two episodes. But like, this is like genuine bonding that we've seen the whole episode with these two. And it's very good. And it's, you know, because in some of the comics, like Hawkeye's like trying to get with Kate Bishop, which is weird as shit. But with this one, it feels like not father-daughter, more like brother-sister relationship where we're going. Like, I may be wrong with that, but that's just like the vibe I'm getting.
I'm getting like uncle and niece kind of thing.
Okay.
But I'm going to cut a promo. They were clearly in a diner, right? It wasn't a Chinese restaurant, as far as I know.
Yeah, it was people. A diner.
People write these goddamn summaries. Yeah. I gotta learn. God damn it. All right. Anyway, Tim.
Goddamn consistency in these write-ups. Motherfucker.
So the underground audiologist should have charged them a lot more than $5, I feel like, for fixing. Like, they seemed quite desperate by their appearance and their demeanor. She should have really fleeced them, I feel like. That's what I would have done in that situation. But anyway, yeah. So not a Chinese restaurant, more of a diner, it seems. I was a little bit confused at first by the fact that it seemed like Clint's hearing aid had not yet been repaired, because they show that he still cannot understand what Kate is saying. But no, then the reveal that he's just turned it off on purpose, that's pretty funny. I have to hand it to him there. Good stuff. And yeah, just the costume illustration and saying, it's going to be purple. You know, purple's your color, basically. He just waves it off. I mean, they had to do this, right? They always do these little nods to the comics, even in ways that don't work, just to say, yeah, we know what we're doing. And I definitely got a kick out of it. I do wonder if it's going to lead to a semi more comics accurate uniform for him, but not totally over the top, like you know, the 60s purple and blue ridiculous Carney Archer costume that he has. So we'll continue to monitor that. But yeah, the stuff with Kazi and the tracksuit mafia is pretty good material. I like that they're fleshing them out, and Kazi just recognizing that these two are gonna have some communication issues, that they are at a disadvantage. So it just shows you that he is not a total goof. There's like some actual strategic thinking behind him. And I like when villains aren't made to be just a total mockery, especially lieutenants like this guy appears to be, you know, could prove to be somewhat more formidable than we've been led to believe so far. I definitely like that touch as well.
Yeah, we get a little, and we also get another mention of Uncle, so could be
yes.
Mm-hmm. Sean, it's your turn.
Yeah, so the Uncle thing.
Sorry for being a pirate there for a second. I apologize.
No, you're fine. No, it's all right. The Uncle thing, yes, continues to pop its head, and you know, in theory, if you watch Marvel, you know, read Marvel comics, you know. And they keep bringing up Uncle, and they're the mafia, the tracksuit mafia. There's really only one person Uncle should be, which we'll bring that up at the end, because if it's not, that's going to be a whole different story for me. But I did enjoy this, again, this diner scene. Like Tim, I thought it was very funny that Hawkeye had to turn off because he didn't want to hear Kate's bullshit, which I thought was great. The napkin piece. All right, so I am a big, huge mark for the Hawkeye costume. The original Hawkeye limited series that he did, Tim. I think that's like my peak Hawkeye fandom of the costume.
Mark Gruenwald.
Yeah, the one where he marries a Mockingbird, and yeah, that is my peak Hawkeye for me. So it's nice, and they do this in every show. So they did it with Loki, with the Loki costume. They did it in WandaVision with the Halloween costume. So they do this continuously. So I hope this is a gimmick that they keep doing, because I think it's pretty cool. But yeah, again, good stuff, good dialogue, and just continuing to build this relationship between the two. And I think I agree with you, Andy. I think it is a lot like maybe an uncle and like a niece and a very close uncle. They just have a really good relationship. So yeah, continues to be very good for me.
All right, so let's get to the conclusion of this episode. Clint, Kate, and the dog go for a walk in the park. He reluctantly elaborates about the mafia, and there's someone above Maya. They catch a cab. Clint worries about the stuff from Avengers Compound that was at the auction. Kate figures that Jack is involved somehow, and Clint admits that the situation is weird but not airtight. Kate figures to get more evidence by sneaking into Eleanor's penthouse and checking her company files. Clint is kind of surprised at that. The duo sneak into the penthouse, and Kate accesses Eleanor's laptop. She discovers that Kazi is an employee by the company connected to Bishop Security. Clint hears someone coming while the security locks Kate out. Clint looks around, and Jack pulls the running sword on Clint and tells him not to move. And that ends the episode. So, Tim, we're at a little bit of a cliffhanger here. What did you think of the conclusion of this one?
I wasn't ready for it to end, shockingly. Wow. I was like, oh, no. Mm. I know. I'm like, is this the show winning me over? No, it can't be. It can't
it
be
is,
that.
Tim. It is.
It is. Well, it's, you know what? I didn't think I would like the show. I was not looking forward to the show. The first two episodes kind of bore that out. And at the same time, I'm in my head thinking, I want to be wrong about this. I want to be pleasantly surprised. And with this episode, I absolutely was pleasantly surprised. And we're going to get some Hawkeye swordsman action now. Yeah, put me down for that. To Sean's point earlier, the uncle stuff has real make or break potential, I'll just say, for this series. And honestly, for a lot of things in terms of just the way the MCU handles these sorts of big reveals. We saw it with WandaVision, right? And I want to say that Marvel kind of gets a pass in that case only because I think the fans and the fandom around that show was swept up into such a frenzy, and based on speculations that were not really within the show itself. Like, we didn't see any like actual mysterious figures caressing someone's face in WandaVision, right? Mm-hmm. We got a few, you know, there's like the unseen, unnamed astrophysics space engineer or whatever, and people decided that had to be someone important, even though
it's Reed
Richards. The show didn't really, you know, the show didn't really put that out there as bait, I feel like, right?
No, it was all speculation from fans.
It was all
the first Marvel show. Yeah.
Yes, and we were so starved for any Marvel content that it just turned into a huge feeding frenzy, I feel like. So, I don't know. I think some folks came away from that series feeling a little bit played, and I don't know that that's I don't know that that's really on the show, right? Whereas here, I mean, they are tiptoeing around. There is a mysterious figure. There's a big bad behind all of this. We're purposely not showing that person. You know, if it just turns out to be like Jack, for example, then why are we even bothering? Like, why tease people in that way? Just if that's who it is, then show us the character. Like the other, our principal protagonists in this don't have to know that. It's still intriguing. It's still mysterious to them. And you can get a lot of mileage out of that. But to hide it from the viewer as well means they know, or they want us to think, that it's someone really important that we're going to recognize, and they're holding back on it for a reason, right? So that could be a real swerve where, like, it to where I would call it a bait and switch if it's not truly who we all think it's gonna be and who I know they want us to think that it is.
All right, well, we'll see when Uncle Mephisto gets revealed. Sean, you're up.
You bet. I think Tim said it very well. Like, with WandaVision, a lot of the things that we were assuming was all speculative. It's nothing the show really did itself. Then they threw us the curveball on Pietro, right? So that was a nice little curveball. And to the credit of the series, it's nothing they did wrong. It's just, to Tim, what Tim said, we wanted. And then you get to Loki, and Loki kind of gave us a little bit of what we wanted, because we got Kang. We got the first, you know, pretty not that much, I like Kang, but they gave us Kang, right? We got what we wanted out of that. Winter Soldier, you know, it's kind of like probably the middle of the road. Nothing really major happened in that show, right? I don't think.
Yeah.
It's nothing,
but I don't know that we were really winding up for any kind of big.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
setups coming out of there.
Yeah. I think that show is exactly what we probably thought it would have been, I guess.
It gave us Val, and it gave us USA.
Well, yeah, I think it was that, but it wasn't stuff that we expected. It was kind of a nice surprise to get things that we didn't see coming, right? So, but in this show, they are blatantly with the uncle. And they know, listen, let's be perfectly honest. People have been dying for who the uncle could be ever since. I mean, I'm just going to come out and say it. You know, the Netflix shows kind of have a place in everyone's heart. I, for one, love the Daredevil show 100%. And By the way, that kingpin, and I forget what his name is,
Vincent D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio. He was an amazing kingpin. And ever since that show has ended, people have been clamoring, and you've been hearing the rumors, oh, Murdoch's going to show up in the next Spider-Man movie. Oh, and then Kingpin's going to show up in Hawkeye. I mean, how convenient would it be that we have both these series coming, the movie and the series coming together? And what if that actually did happen? Like, is Marvel that fantastic to where they synced up the Kingpin showing up in Hawkeye and Matt Murdock showing up in the Spider-Man movie at the same time? I mean, you got to admit, that'd be pretty fantastic if they make that happen. But I'm trepidatious because I don't want to get my hopes up. I don't want to be one of those comicbook.com theory guys like they were with Mephisto. Do I hope it's Kingpin 100%? Because I feel like it has to be, because that is our crime lord in New York. If you have a guy who's in the mafia, who's a crime lord, I mean, who else would it be? Tim Owl or whoever the fuck his name is?
I mean, yeah, right. I mean, somebody we don't even, we haven't even been introduced to. Right?
The Rose. It's just
oh my God.
So it has to be it has to be Kingpin for me. And if it's not, it will be a big letdown for me, because, and maybe it shouldn't be, because I shouldn't expect it to be, but they are teasing the shit out of it being Kingpin.
And it's like, there's not many, when you think about it, there's honestly not that many named characters we've been introduced to in this Hawkeye series so far. So it's kind of like, if it's going to be, if they're not showing the guy's face because it's someone we've already seen in this series, that's a very, very narrow list of suspects, you know? Yes. Which makes me think that they're not revealing it because, well, it's someone from another series. It's someone who there are tons of rumors about. And say what you will about rumors, but I kind of think that a lot of those are seeded by the MCU themselves, right? Just the people behind the MCU, because they want that kind of word of mouth. They want to, you know, sort of put it out there just to have, just so that the fans can have some fun with these leaks and to speculate and actually be right on occasion. I think they fully know what they're doing with some of this stuff. So it's been out there for quite some time. It's being talked about. They're holding back on showing this character, who, by the way, has a big connection to Maya Lopez in the comics. And it feels like it's all there. It's all there in ways that, like, the Mephisto thing was so stupid when you, like, it's just, I mean, that was based on nothing. It was based on one story from a comic that was really bad that everyone has since tried to forget. You know what I mean? Like, and just because they're dealing with the cult, therefore the devil, right? And it's just, there were so many reasons why Mephisto was not going to show up in that series. And it's perhaps, probably not going to show up in the MCU because he's the fucking Christian devil. And I don't think Disney is going to do that. You know, it was so stupid. And I can't believe we kind of all fell for it collectively. I think that was just a period of mass hysteria that we all went through.
But I think we're smarter now.
This is not the same thing. It's really not.
So I'll go into this with trepidation, but here's the cool thing. Either or, you're going to get a bunch of reveals in December. You're either or not going to see all the Spider-Mans in one movie. You're either or not going to see Matt Murdock, and you're either or not going to see the Kingpin. So if they got anticipation going, they got us going there. Now, if none of that happens, well, shame on us. But at the same time, at least we're excited for something that might happen. I'll leave it at that. Other thing I'll bring up is Ronin. All right. So in the comic books, Hawkeye and Swordsman obviously have a relationship, and Swordsman was actually Hawkeye's mentor, right? So my question for you, Tim, is, do you think, so we haven't had Clinton, this guy, Jack, whatever his name is, Jack or whatever, the swordsman,
Jack,
they have not interacted in this show yet whatsoever, right?
Right.
So question
one. We think, as far as we know.
So question one is, will they know each other at that point in time when Hawkeye sees he's got the sword up against his throat?
Mm-hmm.
And question two is there a possibility that, okay, so they had the Ronin suit up for auction. What if the swordsman became Ronin after Hawkeye did? Or Hawkeye was Ronin after? Like, I think there's something going on there with the whole Ronin thing between the two. That's my guess. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I could see it maybe as, was was there, again, like an original Ronin even before Clint? And if so, maybe that was Jack Duquesne.
Correct.
Which would be a very, I don't know, kind of fantastical element to sort of introduce here. But we see the guy's got a weird fascination with swords and handles them pretty damn well. So, yeah, they might be winding up for a reveal of a secret history between these two characters. Because it's sort of like, why... You know, why do the swordsman in a Hawkeye Disney Plus series where, according to this universe, they're totally unrelated characters, you know?
And it could be 5 years of story in that. You know what I mean? There's at least 5 year gap there, and that could be part of the 5 years right there. So
true. Yeah. There's a lot of uncharted history.
Yeah. So I'm excited to see what happens. So all things said, there's a lot of good stuff that could be ahead, or there could be a big fat turd of a reveal, and then I'll be very angry, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. Yep. Scott, what do you think of the end of this episode?
Sorry to go long on that, Andy. That was kind of,
you know. It's all right.
I'm going to get to what Sean and Tim were talking about in a second, but I like the end because this is something I brought up where I was like, who the hell is selling all this Avengers stuff? And I'm glad that it wasn't swept under the rug that Clint was talking about it with, like, you know, it's weird that someone's selling on the black market, basically, all this Avengers stuff from a compound. And I had a feeling I thought it was going to be the mom that maybe pulled out something. And then, like, we'll see at the next episode, like, Kate's like, calm down, we're all on the same page. But with it being Jack, that's going to be a whole lot different. So I'm really interested in that. I personally don't think, I may be wrong here, but I don't think Jack and Hawkeye, they'll say they know each other or I think there was just one Ronin. But I just did the math for this. So we're on episode 3. So episode 4 would be December 8th, episode 5, December 15th, and episode 6, the last episode, December 22nd. Mm-hmm. I don't think we see Kingpin, if it is Kingpin. I'm trying to temper expectations after, you know, we talked about, it's Reed Richards is that astrophysicist. It's all like all these other people. I don't think we see Kingpin until December 17th.
Until after you see Matt Murdock and Spider-Man 5 days earlier, right?
Yep.
Okay. I see what you're doing.
I'm with you on that, Scott. I have a gut on that. I'm with you.
Because like Sean, you were saying that, and I was like, damn, that would be like a nice little thing. I mean,
that would be amazing, actually.
I know we're getting like off topic, but like, here's how much the Marvel fans are crazy. They saw someone's wrist in a trailer and was like, that's fucking Matt Murdock. So
right.
It's like, you see that hair? You see that hair on his wrist? You know, Daredevil episode 3, 32 minutes in, it was the same shade. So it's like, sometimes we do it to ourselves. We're our own worst enemies. But this is why, like, people are passionate about like these stories, because, like, you know, this is the golden age of like comic book, not storytelling in the books, because Marvel's been pretty shitty and DC not that great the past couple years, but just being able to see it on the big screen or any screen. Because before, like, you know, we had like the Batman movies and everything, and then we had like the animated series that was good, but like there was no like this. But think of like just what the MCU has created in the past, you know, since 2008. It's just amazing. And everyone is trying. That's all you hear about now. It's like, oh, we need our own cinematic universe. They try to create the fucking dark cinematic universe, and that was DOA. DCU, I love you, but goddamn, like, Warner Brothers keeps getting in the way on that. But that's a whole other podcast. But, like, and it's just great that we're able to think, like, oh, you know, maybe we do have Kingpin. But I'm worried. Like, because the uncle person, I remember I read stuff where people were like, uncle, you could tell that's Vincent D'Onofrio's laugh. And I was like, I never got that. But hey, whatever.
I mean, I kind of thought it, but I was also looking for it. So,
but after we got burned with like Mephisto and everything, I'm trying to temper expectations. Like, that's why I was worried, like saying like, oh, we're going to get him December 22nd or something, because they did show a teaser for next week. I guess it's been released, and it looks like that's where we're going to see Yelena. I don't know if you guys have seen that.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I've been wondering how she's going to fit into this. Yeah.
I think finale. I think that will be in the finale too.
Yeah, but it looked like
her in like a cat burglar thing, and it's similar to what she had in the comics. So
maybe.
Yeah.
All right.
Very like good. Maybe she's running the tracksuit mafia, perhaps.
I hope not, because I think
maybe she was Ronin.
That might make Sean main roster angry.
All right, so Spider-Man, Far From Home. Sorry, I couldn't think of the name. That premieres the 17th. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they doing a Thursday midnight thing?
Yeah, because I'm actually seeing it that Thursday at 7 p.m.
So realistically, Thursday the 16th is when people are going to be seeing that movie.
Yeah. Also, I would suggest to our listeners, if you don't want to be spoiled, I would go radio silent until you've seen that. I wouldn't even get on any social media. That's what I planned on doing. That's what I did with Avengers, so I wasn't spoiled. So.
Yeah. And like you said, you've got that that fifth episode of Hawkeye on that Wednesday, the 15th. So potentially, you're looking at a situation where whatever happens in that fifth episode on Wednesday, if it's a Wilson Fisk, I think that does add credence to Matt Murdock might be showing up, at least just in a cameo in Spider-Man, which you'll be seeing the next day. I mean, if they really lined that up, then
that'd be the greatest thing Marvel ever did if they did that.
That's pretty ingenious. Yeah, you know, that great. Would get people talking. That would get and if in fact they have both of those kind of up their sleeve that they're holding off on, that's kind of the way I would stagger it if I was them.
All right. So any final thoughts that we haven't talked about for what we're going to see in the next episode? Sean?
Well, you know, we kind of just talked about it for the last 20 minutes. So I think we're kind of there. I do think they got to be careful here. There's a lot of reveals that could be. This has the potential to be one of the like most genius things Marvel ever did, or it has the potential to be one of the biggest letdowns. What I will say is this single episode of Hawkeye might be my favorite single episode of any MCU series that we have watched up to this point.
Wow.
Because this was the but part of it is because I really like Hawkeye, but this is my Hawkeye, and the storytelling they told in this, like as bad as the first two episodes were to me, I was not looking forward to this episode. I was like, man, I can't believe how bad this show is. And now I'm all fired up after watching this episode, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out over the course of the rest of the series. So really, really well done episode, and probably one of my all-time favorites in MCU so far. So that's how much I like.
All right, Scott, any final thoughts?
No, just, you know, I'm getting excited because I can't wait till Wednesdays again. Like, it's one of the good things about – there's only two shows that I watch basically quote-unquote live – the MCU shows, which I just roll into one, and Succession. So, like that, I'm just happy both of them are here.
All right. Tim, any final thoughts?
Really, really strong episode, making up for the lackluster start to this series. I don't know that I go so far as Sean to say it's my favorite individual episode so far, largely because that's due to the fact I'm reserving my right to change my mind if we get a real wet fart.
Well, it could. Well, you know, next week or the next couple weeks could totally change my opinion of the show. It's pretty to go from great to really bad, really bad.
Yeah, so. Like I mean, next week could be some real wheel spinning if in fact they are holding off on a spectacular reveal in that fifth episode, right? Which I think maybe we could mentally prepare ourselves for and not come down too hard on this next episode here that awaits us. I'll just say, you know, the MCU, I think they've needed some buzz just in terms of like, they've been churning out movies this year, but I don't think Black Widow or Shang-Chi or Eternals have really got people talking, and at least not talking in the way they want people to be talking necessarily. And they sort of need a hit here, and I think they can achieve that in having Hawkeye, which has been not perceived as a big event sort of series. He's not a character who's designed to go big, right? He's a pretty smaller, more contained, down to earth type character. But if they did sort of get some synchronicity out of a big villain introduction in this series, who actually would make a lot of sense based on what they're setting up and the story they're telling, complemented by yet another hero's introduction, at least in, again, a cameo in their next big film. Doesn't mean that the two projects are connected, but to have two related characters back to back in that way would really be a crowd pleaser. So, I don't know. We'll have to stay tuned.
All right. Very good. So that brings the end of this episode of Pop Goes to the Couch, where we reviewed episode 3 of Hawkeye Season 1, Echoes. And we'll see you here next week for Sean Kidd, Scott Shiflett, and Tim Capel. I'm Andy Atherton. Check us out 1 week from now. Take care. Gingerbread, gingerbread.